Podo. You're listening to Movers and Shakers, a podcast about living with Parkinson's. The show is sponsored by Judge Nick Mostyn's Old Chambers and by the generous contributions of private donors. Hello and welcome to Movers and Shakers. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones and we are back in the pub. Yes, we do go home from time to time for another session of giggling, griping and moaning about our common interest, Parkinson's. So first of all, let's see who's turned up this time.
Nicholas Mostyn.
Mark Mardell.
Paul Mayhew-Archer.
Jeremy Paxman.
Gillian Lacey Solomar.
Lovely to see you all. Well, they've gone and done it again. They've let me do another episode about technology and Parkinson's. Don't be like that. I've drafted in two fabulous guests with two amazing gadgets. But before we meet them, let's see what role tech is playing in either monitoring or treating our Parkinson's around this table. Judge, you're quite a techie guy, aren't you? Aren't you a coder?
Well, not really, but I understand the basics of it. But I don't have the benefit of any tech.
You don't use it at all in relation to your Parkinson's?
I don't.
You haven't got any apps?
Nope.
Nothing to remind you when to take your pills?
Apart from my watch, it tells me when to take my pills.
Oh, a slight aid. What about you, Mark? Well, of course, you've got something...
Very important. Very techie. I wouldn't say I was particularly techie, but with the aid of Creative Duck, Nicola and Hattie, I set up a website for Movers and Shakers, which is moversandshakerspodcast.com.
And it's, you remember the address. That's a triumph.
Yeah, that's a triumph.
I usually got it on my computer and I just click the link, you see. You don't have to remember it normally. I'm really very proud of it, very pleased with it. And it's allowed us, for instance, when we did Paul's episode on embarrassing stuff, we got him reading another embarrassing story.
We've given Mark license to put defamatory material about us on the website.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. You should wait to see what's coming.
Yeah, so it's a major contribution to our
I think so, yeah.
outreach. Apart from that, do you use tech at all in your Parkinson's?
Yes, my alarm on my iPhone went off at 12 o'clock with some jazz to tell me that it was time to take my pills, which I completely ignored, so I need someone to pass my jacket in a moment. But apart from that, no. I like all the idea of these gadgets, the feedback to the doctors and stuff. I think they're a good idea. Also a bit scary because they might say, don't eat so many sausage rolls or
whatever. I'd like to actually repent of my previous answer because I realise that I also have this Oura ring.
Oh, that's right.
Which is there to monitor my sleep because my impaired sleep is my principal
symptom.
It's
amazingly blingy.
It is a bit blingy, but it does measure how well I sleep, how much time I actually spend asleep, how much deep sleep, REM sleep, and it then measures it and the progress, which because I'm on melatonin to try and improve this particular symptom, and it is recording an improvement, you know, slowly but surely in the amount of time I'm sleeping. So the pill is excellent at recording that information.
And knowing that does help you.
And knowing that does help me, yeah.
Paul, what about you?
Hopeless. Absolutely hopeless.
You've got a wired-up brain.
I've got a wired-up brain, but I didn't do it.
You're a walking cyborg.
Yes,
you are.
I can't remember to do anything. I don't have anything to remind me to take my pills, so I keep forgetting to take them. I'm just absolutely hopeless with tech.
And why is that? Is it because
I'm lazy, because I'm disorganised, because I don't really understand how tech works? And I've never been bothered. My wife says that I'm obsessed with it. But I'm obsessed with it because I'm trying to work out how it works and I can't ever do it. It's just a completely difficult world for me.
I imagine that's very different for you, Jeremy. I imagine you're totally wired.
What are you talking about? Of course I'm not totally wired.
You mean you don't have an app that reminds you when to take your pills or measures how well you're doing?
I have an alarm clock by the bed.
Right.
How do you remember to take your pills during the day?
It goes in the middle of the day.
Oh, what, the alarm clock?
Yes.
Do you carry it with you?
No.
I was just thinking of Treasure Island or whatever. What is it that the crocodile swallows an alarm clock?
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan. If you're not at home, what prompt do you have, Jeremy, to remind...
I have no prompt apart from my partner.
Right. Well, that's very high tech. Gillian, what about you? You are, I get the idea, more techie in some way.
Well, I'm sort of... borderline, I suppose. I mean, first of all, I've got the thing in my head, so that's without that, I would be a goner.
The DBS,
yes. So that's pretty high tech. Without that, you know, life would not be worth living. So that's very important. In terms of everyday stuff, I haven't found an app yet. I looked for one, actually, to remind me to take my drugs, but I need to take them at different times every single day.
But so you have an app called Mike.
But yes. I have an app called Mike, which is it works brilliantly.
Brilliant app, isn't it?
It's a brilliant app.
It works in all time zones. It works when you're cut off from the internet. It's a brilliant one.
Highly recommended.
We all need a mic.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, having followed this field in the 5 years since I was diagnosed, there's loads of stuff happening, but none of it so far has come through into my care. So there's all sorts of ways of measuring your symptoms and diagnosing and so on, but then they're not yet being used. It's still quite old-fashioned care, isn't it? It's walk up and down
outside.
What about
the one that was in the paper yesterday about this pump that's going to deliver the levodopa?
Yeah, that's not very high-tech, is it? It's something that plugs into your stomach. Doesn't sound very attractive to me.
No, not with the needle.
But it evens it out, doesn't it?
It does, it does.
The delivery of the
levodopa. But there are patches too which do that.
Patches do that.
Anyway, we are going to get a glimpse into the future with our two guests. And our first one is Dr. Rutger Zietzma. I met Rutger when I was asked to be the guinea pig in a demo of his NeuroPen, a pen which uses artificial intelligence to diagnose Parkinson's. And this was on the Royal Institution Christmas lectures shown each year on the television. I think we can hear a bit of it. Let's have a listen.
Let's start by talking about Parkinson's disease. And to help explain this disease, I'd like you to welcome Dr. Rutger Zietzma and former BBC technology correspondent Rory Kethlin-Jones. OK, Rory, you take a seat. Rutger, tell us, how is AI being used to help diagnose Parkinson's disease?
Yes, I would like to introduce to you the Neuromotor Pen. Ideally, with a brief demonstration. Rory, would you mind giving it a go?
I will give it a go.
So, Rutger, good to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, you did a tech demo during that Royal Institution Christmas lecture with me writing with your pen on the screen. It's much easier to do this on a podcast than in television where things go wrong, because I remember we had rehearsals during the day and the Wi-Fi went down and it all fell apart. But this is going to work perfectly now. I've got you a willing guinea pig in the form of Gillian, who's sitting next to you.
Yep.
Just describe, first of all, before you get her to do something, what have you got there? What is it?
Okay, so very brief. Why this pen? How can this help people? First thing I think we need to understand is that drawing is one of the most complex fine motor skills that humans are capable of performing. It's a learned skill, and it's a skill that typically deteriorates as we get older. And it depends on the integration of the musculoskeletal system with the central nervous system and the integrity of the central nervous system. There are four parts of the brain that work together in coordinating these really complex fine movements involved with drawing and handwriting. And it's one of those systems that's called the extrapyramidal system that's got a very specific role in making sure these movements go very smoothly. If there's some kind of impairment in the extrapyramidal system, what happens is these movements become hyperkinetic or hypokinetic. So there's too much or too little movement. And the extrapyramidal system runs automated programs to make sure these things can happen peripherally. We don't have to think about it. It finds a balance between speed and accuracy. Increase the speed as the distance becomes larger. And also when you hold the thing, you make sure that you grip it and you don't drop it, but also you don't crush it. And it balances the moments.
So around what you're saying is when we're drawing with a pen or when we're writing, we're doing something incredibly demanding and complex.
Incredibly demanding. And it's something that's impaired in, for example, Parkinson's disease, because that part of the brain controls fine movement is impaired. And from these measurements that we're taking from this pen on this tablet, we're understanding how these impairments affect somebody's movement. And therefore, we can, first of all, quantify symptoms with very high precision, but also we can interpret them further and we can help differentiate between different movement disorders.
So let's have a quick demo.
Let's have a go.
So we're starting a new test here. I'll give you the pen.
Thank you.
What you will be seeing on the screen is a circle. If you could please trace the circle from the top all the way around and it up multiple times.
Sorry, the actual right over the circle.
That's right.
Gillian has got the pen.
And I have to follow it as closely.
And you have to follow it closely.
Whoa, not very closely.
Whoa. Just do it twice.
Okay.
Okay.
Whoa, it's not really hitting it very well, is it?
You're doing really well. You're doing really well.
Okay. That's the end of this task.
Well done, Gillian.
There are a few more of those.
I'm sure the actual test involves a lot more exercises than that. And then what do you get out of that?
So there are three steps involved. First step is calculating the data set. So with these sensors in the pen, this is a unique sensor system in the pen that quantifies these fine movements. We get the kinematics of movement of the pen, but also the tremor from the pen. Data set, comprehensive rich data set, will then be translated with a set of algorithms into digital biomarkers. And that gives information to the clinician that's actually useful, because these digital biomarkers represent the symptoms that they are interested in measuring, things like bradykinesia, slowness, but also tremor that we could see slightly when you were drawing over the circle.
And so are you saying this is a more objective thing than doing that thing where you open your hands and close them that they make you do every single time you go and see a consultant?
Correct. It's more objective, it's more accurate, there's more detail in there, more granularity.
And what's the AI about it?
And the AI is the next step. So once we've got the movement symptoms recorded, we overlay that with AI, and the AI can interpret these movement symptoms and it can differentiate between different movement disorders. So you may have somebody with something that's called essential tremor plus, which is an essential tremor which ordinarily is not necessarily disabling. But ET, essential tremor, could come with Parkinson-like symptoms, and that can be very difficult to differentiate from, for example, Parkinson's disease. And this device can help you do this, especially when this is difficult. This is in about 20% of patients that are seen by the movement disorder specialist. This can be helpful. And the FDA has given us breakthrough device.
That's the American regulator.
Correct. It's given us breakthrough device designation that confirms this. It says, we've established that this is a unique test that is in the best interest of the patient, that can make a more effective diagnosis. And it's got some unique clinical claims allowing you to do this.
So does it allow early diagnosis, for example?
It allows you a slightly earlier diagnosis. So if you see a patient for the first time, it can be really difficult to make this assessment. You would see them multiple times. But if you can increase the accuracy at the first appointment from, let's say, 50% to 80%, that can give you a slightly earlier diagnosis. And instead of seeing a patient a number of times over an 18-month period, you may be able to make the diagnosis early on. Also, away from the specialist clinic, thinking about the continuum of care in primary care, for example, where primary care physicians ordinarily aren't trained in
your
diagnosing.
Your
GP aren't trained necessarily in making this diagnosis, but it will help them decide who to refer to the specialist and make sure that those people who need to be seen by a specialist early to be diagnosed, get a treatment, and hopefully have a stepwise increase of quality of life, that those people are prioritised.
Are the NHS interested?
The NHS is interested, so we have done a lot of trial work with them. We've implemented a number of clinics in primary care and secondary care clinics as well. I must admit, it's easier to get this adopted in Europe.
It's a British company, though.
We're a British company, absolutely. We're based in the northeast of England and Edinburgh.
And you're finding it easier to be accepted by health services in Europe than you are here?
A little bit, yeah, especially in private clinics.
Come down to money.
I mean, yeah, NHS is obviously...
It's composed of so many bits, isn't it? Don't you have to sell each bit separately?
That's right, it's complex.
Yeah. Branko, why should this pen be any more accurate than the colleague of Paul's who said, I don't want to trouble you, but I think from the state of your signature, you've probably got Parkinson's.
So, you know, movement disorder specialists trained in making a diagnosis, they can be very good at making these diagnoses, but not everybody looking at patients necessarily has had that level of training.
So a GP,
this person didn't. According to Paul, he was just a person who was hanging around the office.
And the other thing is that it can take quite a long time to make a diagnosis.
Did the input of Gillian give you sufficient data to draw any conclusions, or would she have had to have done more?
She would have had to do more. So we just did two repetitions of one
task.
That's
not enough.
We would ordinarily do six of these tasks and do two repetitions, or do one or two tasks and do a large number of repetitions.
So it would only be about 5 minutes.
Maybe we could do it after.
Yeah, so the fastest test we can do is about 6 minutes.
Yes. And then that generates sufficient data to draw some conclusions.
It does, yes.
How much
that's
is
quite
this
amazing,
case?
Isn't it?
I met a neurologist from Holland who came over, and he was in Oxford, and he just walked around Oxford and said, there's a lot more Parkinson's around than people think. And do you think if your pen was accepted and you could do a test in 6 minutes, we'd find there's a lot more Parkinson's than we thought?
Well, that is true. Even in the developed world, many people go undiagnosed for many years. You know, even in a country like Germany, where we know a number of specialists we work with, in the rural areas, there are many patients who have not been diagnosed, and being able to screen people or do a quick test in primary care and prioritize appointments to make a diagnosis, that is really worthwhile.
Now, there are other emerging methods of diagnosing people. We heard about one using a mass spectrometer and taking a swab off the back of your neck. Mm-hmm. Why is this better than those other methods?
I think they're all complementary. I think there's value in a variety of tests, both for diagnostic assessment and monitoring assessment. I think what we're doing here is we're looking at signs and symptoms when these are very subtle and difficult to spot and difficult to interpret. So it gives the physician additional information that can help them make a more accurate diagnosis and do this a little bit quicker.
Isn't there this point as well that if this became universal or near universal or commonplace, then, as I said earlier, not only would diagnosis be done on a standardised basis, but you would accumulate a whole lot of data.
Correct.
That had been generated all on on the same basis. So that would make research into Parkinson's and the causes of Parkinson's and the treatment of Parkinson's so much more valid, you would have thought.
Absolutely. Think of prognostics, see how people develop once they've had a diagnosis, once they're being treated. Phenotypic Parkinson's disease, different types of Parkinson's disease developing in different ways. You can monitor those things, and this will shed light on those varieties of Parkinson's disease and how it develops in people and how to treat them well and keep them as well as possible.
Like a lot of brilliant ideas, it's very simple in that we all know that your handwriting gets smaller when you've got Parkinson's. How did you have the idea in the first place?
At the time, I was doing a PhD in neuroscience, and I was using my engineering background in understanding these complex neuromuscular processes. And I thought, well, if we can measure those things, that could be useful in, for example, monitoring a condition, but potentially also in prognostics, see how people develop, and potentially even diagnosis. So then it became an R&D project to figure out exactly how we could go from that understanding of the strategies that the nervous system adopts to execute these complex movements to capturing those and see how these change actually with the development of disease and how it's different in, for example, Parkinson's disease than it is in, for example, essential tremor.
How long has it taken to get from having the idea to where you are now?
It's been about a 10-year journey of R&D, clinical trials, fundraising.
Okay.
That's what I find companies like yours heroic, actually, because yes, there's so much work and it's so long before it pays off. And the odds are so great still, aren't they, against you succeeding. Are you confident that you will now?
I think we're at a stage that things look really promising, promising with funding, promising with clinical trial results, with FDA approvals, early adoption, having a strong team. I actually think we're in a better place than we've ever been, and I think the future looks bright for Manus.
Well, good luck. I mean, and great stage today, appearing on Movers and Shakers. Yeah. That is the key hurdle, I think.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rutger. And our second guest is Caroline Cake, Chief Executive of New Health. That's NEU Health. Welcome, Caroline.
Hello.
Now, her gadget is a smartphone app, which I have been trying out for the last 10 days. Its aim is to transform Parkinson's care by allowing we Parkies to have our symptoms monitored remotely by doctors without having to visit the hospital. When you first get the app, you're supposed to go through a set of exercises four times a day using the sensors on the phone. And I've been doing that. Have a listen. Instructions. Take a deep breath and say, ah, for as long and steadily as you can. Okay. Start. Well done, it says. Right, next, walking. Place the phone in your pocket, walk forward in a straight line, turn around and walk back again. Repeat until the exercise ends.
Please stand up and place the phone in your pocket. The exercise starts in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Begin.
Now, tapping. Instructions. Tap the buttons alternating between your middle and index fingers on your left hand first. Keep a regular and steady pace. Oh, goodness me. Start. Okay, left hand first. Please use your left testicle sign. 3, 2, 1. Here I go. So there were 7 exercises in all. It took about 10 minutes, 4 times a day. I found it actually quite stressful having to do that. But Caroline, explain what that was all about. What am I doing there with your smartphone app?
So what you're doing is you're effectively gathering data about you, which is then being downloaded and sent up to the cloud. Algorithms which were developed at University of Oxford, so by Professor Michelle Hughes' lab, and also lab Professor Masood Hussain. So 2 labs at the University of Oxford that have been, over the last 10 years, gathering that data and actually using that to then develop calculations as to how you're progressing with the condition, likelihoods of risks of progression, likelihoods of cognitive falls, other features like that, and also just giving the data back to the clinical team so they can see how you're getting on overall.
I've actually been speaking to your colleague, Kinnan, while doing this, and he's been giving me a bit of a readout of how I'm doing. And thankfully, my rate of progression is only medium. So that's a bit of a relief. It's not fast.
And how do you find that?
Well, I found it fascinating. I've seen other forms of monitoring, but at least I didn't have to wear anything. It all works off the different sensors on a smartphone.
Yes, we're aiming to make it as simple as possible so that it's available on just a classic smartphone that most people have. It means the clinical team don't need to be having additional hardware or equipment to be sending out. They can just have the patients download it. And it's not just the doctors.
Does it address sleep?
One of the symptoms we ask about is sleep. So as well as the motor measures, there's also cognitive measures and self-reported symptoms, so including the full range of different symptoms that you might be experiencing.
So hang on, you just have to have this phone on you for it to measure you?
No, you're actively engaged. So you do a series of active tasks.
I have done it because I come from...
Yes, you were part of the original...
I was part of the, and the problem is that I needed another app to remind me to take the test.
So we've now built that in.
Fantastic.
Based on feedback from people like you.
The other app is called Wife, isn't it?
but let's get the overall aim here is, at the moment, we see our doctor once a year. They make us walk up and down outside the lab and do these sort of weird sort of exercises. And they give you a snapshot. And then you don't see them for ages and you could have changed completely. And this is to provide, a more... continuous form of care?
So a number of things. It's effectively a chronic disease management approach. So taking inspiration from diabetes and other conditions like that, where you're more proactively managing the condition real time, giving that longitudinal data, giving it objectively to the clinical team so that they can then, and as well as the measures, we're also having medication adherence and all the different aspects on there. So they can actually see how, are you on the right medications? Are you adhering to them appropriately? Do they need to adjust anything in your care? Are you on the right therapies? So building the whole program around you so that right from the start, the educational materials. So you're off to a great start in terms of managing the condition from the very beginning.
So is it really for us or for our doctors?
Both. So it's from a clinician point of view, they've got the objective information. Your point of view, you've got the information that you can be then acting at home without the clinical team there.
Because one of the things that worries me, the data said to Rory that his progression's medium. Now, if that had been that your progression's very fast, that could well have caused some sort of, depression or something. Is that taken on board, that possibility?
So that information is given to the clinical team. The individual is not receiving that information yet.
I
was given a readout.
This clever Oura Ring is recording data about me continuously, 24 hours a day, but it's not focused on Parkinson's. Obviously, it's just focused on well-being for people generally. Could something like this marry your app so that you could have continuous data recorded of me, which then is analysed from a Parkinson's point of view to see whether I'm deteriorating or not?
Absolutely. So we can start over time building in those passive measures, which is that as an example of. There's also the passive information on your smartphone or the Apple Watch and things like that.
Yes.
That can be integrated over time. The challenge with some of those at the moment is, as you said, that you don't know what's about the fact you sat down in a chair all day versus you were out walking all day. It's the context makes it slightly more difficult to interpret.
Yours is a platform which could use other...
Yeah, so we can build in other sensors. Pieces in around there.
If it was in active use, for clinical reasons, how often would you have to do these tests?
So you build a baseline, first of all. So the first step, which is what Rory's just been doing, then thereafter, you're only needing to engage once a week or so with it. And then another baseline might happen, say, just before your next clinical meeting, so you can see the change over time, what's happened between when you were 6 months before and how you're doing over time on that.
The interesting thing here is the aim to make you actually visit the hospital less because you're providing the doctor with the data?
For some patients, yes. So particularly if you're in a good, stable position, you don't need to be coming in. It's to make a more objective decision-making around that versus there might be some patients who are actually needing more care, more support sooner, in which case you can see that.
It enables the medics to make contemporaneous decisions.
Exactly.
Because they've got the information immediately, a year later.
And what are these decisions? They could ring up and say, you need to take more exercise.
Or more drugs. drugs.
Yes, or your medication, you're not adhering to the medication quite as you expect you to be, or maybe we need to adjust the medication doses or the timings of the day. We can see, because we can see fluctuation through the day, and it's really interesting, as you look through the data, you can see somebody actually perhaps a little bit lower in the morning and then starting to respond after the first medication. What if you shifted that medication a little bit earlier? That might help them. Or gave them something that was a slow release overnight that might help them better in the morning. Yes. So you can start adjusting that medication. Yeah, it's fascinating.
I had an example of this in that using another system, not Caroline's, that my doctor had access to. He could see how I was responding to a new drug, and he then could tweak the dose. Yes. He gave me a new prescription and changed the dose. Whereas normally I'd have to wait until I saw him.
Didn't identify your naughty Sunday breakfast.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And this also includes for the advances of things like DBS as well, being able to give that longitudinal objective data as they're adjusting that. They can actually see, we can see remotely
the change.
Of course,
the next stage would be to have AI to assess the data to make the decisions. And then, of course, you just make all the neurologists redundant.
I think we're a way off that at the moment. But what we can do, given the neurologist constraints, and we can actually help where that resource is deployed and making sure that we're actually, as the UK, getting the best out of the resource we have.
So you're a spin out from the University of Oxford. At some stage, you need to make some money. How's that going?
So we have our first contracts in the NHS, which is wonderful. So we're set up in Suffolk as our first location of doing it. We've got, so far, of the tests that you've done, we've had 2,000 of them the patients have been doing remotely on that, and we're being funded for that first project by the Trust.
Right. And is that a kind of trial, or will that be revenue?
We hope, based on what we've achieved so far, that they'll actually see us as something on an ongoing basis that we'll be working with on that. And then we've got about 28 other trusts in the pipeline that we're in conversations with.
And are you looking abroad as well?
We are. We're starting to look over at the US and building on and actually seeing the two actually being very complementary. So the work we're doing here in the UK alongside what's happening in the US actually working really nicely together.
It seems to me that the aspect which is of critical importance is it will monitor you if something is deteriorating in a bad way, which you would not be picked up by a neurologist for perhaps 11 months.
And also in a good way, if you're actually in a stable position and you don't need to be doing, you can feel confident that actually what you're doing is working and you're managing it well.
Do you have measures if someone's deteriorating? Is there sort of a red light that comes on or something so that the consultant's aware?
We're working with one of the clinical teams getting the right levels. Yeah,
an obvious feature that...
We also don't want too many alerts, so that everyone's got alerts.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So it's working at the right levels for that.
I find this incredibly exciting, and the previous invention as well. And maybe I'm a bit starry-eyed, but I see this as the only sort of thing that's going to save the NHS tech that makes things eventually cheaper. I wanted to ask you whether I'm right, and also Rory, whether I should be more cynical.
Well, we'll come to Caroline in a minute. The reason I'm worried, which is slightly what came up with Rutger, is I talked to a lot of companies in this field, British companies, and I chaired a session, off-the-record session, and one of the biggest companies in London, quite a well-known health tech company, said it had given up on the UK market because the NHS was great at asking for trials and cheering on trials, but when it actually came to putting hard cash up, it didn't work, whereas in the US it did.
It is hard, but it does feel as though the direction of travel is exactly as you said, Mark. This is the direction of travel. The NHS at all levels does recognise that. It's a case of then decision by decision. I think, as you mentioned earlier on, Gillian, there are all of these different trusts you're having to sell piece by piece. So that does add time to it.
You're also going to, like the previous guests, going to be accumulating a large amount of electronic data in a standardised form, which will be invaluable to researchers as to how Parkinson's...
I mean, there's all sorts of data governance kind of aspects around that as to...
Of course, there are GDPR,
etc.
aspects,
yeah.
But on an anonymised basis, you would have thought there would be a vast amount of data which would then be invaluable.
Absolutely,
for
helping people understand better what's working, what's
exactly
not working.
What is working.
And also as a companion to drug treatments, so new treatments coming out, how effective, who's suitable for it, who's not suitable for it, is, incredibly useful.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Caroline. That was another fascinating presentation. So two examples of how tech is helping to basically measure Parkinson's, but we're all waiting for something which will cure it, aren't we? Any thoughts on what we've heard?
I am very impressed, and I think that if it can be linked up to a watch or a ring so that we're being continuously monitored, so it doesn't depend on when our smartphone is on, so that there is absolutely 24/7 data being accumulated, so the team can then see how we are progressing or deteriorating in real time, then that is going to be a game changer, in my opinion.
Are you being sponsored by the makers of that ring?
No, I'm not at all being sponsored by the makers of The Ring, although it is very interesting to see how it monitors the my principal adverse symptom.
I mean, I think this is just extraordinary. When you think about, somebody said about the thing we've all done and will repeatedly do every year, walk down the corridor and do this with your hands.
Yeah,
it makes it feel like, you know, sort of black and red humours of the medieval times, yes, compared to this.
Exactly.
I suppose I would ask, as this is being moved out to more and more trusts, are there enough guinea pigs and people willing to take part in this?
Well, clinical trials, we could do a whole new episode on that and how inefficient they are and how we all need to get involved.
I like the idea of being monitored, certainly, and I like the idea of objectivity, taking out the subjectivity from it, because you always think that one nurse is not going to say the same thing as the other nurse. I just worry about this country not adopting, you know, the technologies fast enough. I really do. I used to teach entrepreneurship and it came up over and over and over again. We're brilliant at innovation and then we're not good at rolling it out. It's tragic.
We're not
really
investing.
No, we're not.
Yeah. Jeremy, what do you think of what you've
heard?
It
breaks my heart.
Yeah.
To think that people aren't taking advantage of something which is being developed here.
Yeah, and we've got brilliant startup companies, small companies, and both these two inventions came out of British universities. So let's hope that somebody sees the light. Well, that's all for this week. I'm off to do more of those exercises. You've been listening to Movers and Shakers, a podcast about living with Parkinson's. The show is sponsored by Judge Nick Mostyn's Old Chambers and by the generous contributions of private donors. The show is produced by Nick Hilton for Poddo. Our theme music is by Alex Stubbs and cover artwork by Till Lucat. Please subscribe to get new episodes straight into your podcast app and do rate and review if you enjoyed the show. We have a brand new all-singing, all-dancing website with lots more information about each episode. You will find it at www.moversandshakerspodcast.com. And please email any thoughts or questions to feedback@moversandshakerspodcast.com. See you next week.